TLS is go for main engine start.
Go at throttle up. Negative return. Then we see a nominal MECO. Welcome to space.
Hello, friends. Welcome to Off Nominal 54. I don't know why we do the numbers now. I do the numbers as part of the intro now. Just to, I don't know. Maybe they're getting cool after 50. Like, what's my, why am I into it?
Once you get past a certain point, you're allowed to brag about it. Is that what it is?
That we've done effectively an entire year of weekly shows, only 2 months into our weekly experiment.
Yeah.
That's one way to look at it. Jake, we've got a, if you drew the Venn diagram of this podcast, of space nerds, developers, people that like beer.
And drinking.
We've got a friend that sits right at the crossover of all of them. Matt, how's it going?
I love Venn diagrams as well, so it's perfect.
Okay, really. It's a quad, an extra Venn diagram.
Yeah, absolutely. Totally, yeah, it's awesome. Thank you so much for inviting me on. It's a huge pleasure to chat to you guys.
Man, now I'm thinking about a Venn diagram where one of the circles says Venn diagram, and it's like
the
funniest
thing.
What
does that do? Yeah, I can't quite pass that.
You have to add that to your the Starliner, Starlab, Starship.
The star Venn diagram.
Yeah. You got to break that one back out.
Oh, man. Okay. All right. We're off to a good start here.
Oh, yeah. Well, where do we start this show?
I think usually we do drinks, right?
Yes.
Yeah. We were just joking before that at some point along this train, we're going to figure out how to start a show, but I think it's drinks. So, well, Matt, why don't you start? You're the guest.
I can do. So obviously I know you like a nice fancy drink, obviously space themed, if you can. So like a couple of years ago, I got really into stouts, like really dark beer, just for some reason. It's always cold and wintry here, you know, that's just what you do. And I'm lucky in Bristol, there's a whole bunch of like amazing breweries just like around the corner from us. So I picked this one, which is a milkshake. Get it in the frame.
I'll help you out. Other direction.
Hold on.
Work it.
There you go. Thank you.
Ooh, look at that.
Wife and True milkshake, which is like drinking chocolate milk, basically, but it has a space shuttle on it as well, which is just seems perfect.
Can you explain what the name of that beer means to an American?
Milkshake or Wiper and True?
Wiper and True. I feel like that's a...
I think it's just two cool words.
I don't know.
Together. I don't know
if I ended up somewhere and asked for a Wiper and True, they'd be like, different part of town, man. Let's somewhere else.
But yeah, it's a delightful, dark looking, like proper wintry drink. Even though spring's crying today, but like dark drinks are good.
He's got the whole thing going.
Okay. Excellent. Yeah. Anthony, what are you up to?
I broke out the beer today. I've got this one from Ten Bends in Vermont, and it's called Hovered Ridge. And it just kind of looks like cool Martian photos, like of the mountains into the distance. Nice. I just was digging the terrain vibe, given our topic today.
I'm kind of getting like a Titan vibe from that, not a Mars vibe.
I know, but I just meant more like it's a terrain vibe generally. And I'm trying to make it topical.
Trying to do like a show call back there.
I know, the colors are backwards. It's a red sky and blue ground instead of the other way around. Yeah. But you know,
very nice. Very
I'm
nice.
Not in the space beer haven that Vancouver was. So my camera is freaking. There it is.
Whoa, there you go. You're back. So I totally forgot about setting anything up today, and then I had to go and work with what I had. But thankfully, I had a lot of stuff. So I'm just doing a traditional margarita today.
Oh, look at you.
Nice.
Nothing too crazy, just some good Mexican tequila and lime juice and orange liqueur. Straightforward.
So the investment in your liquor setup has paid off now in that you've scrambled to pull one together for the show.
Yeah, past me finally did future me a favor for once. In
a well-stocked section of your house.
I might have gone a little heavy on the tequila on this, though, so we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see.
Cool. So maybe Matt, why don't you just start with how do you? I'm always interested when two people come up with like multiple interests that all align. And so like you're in this web development space, and you're also in loving Mars images space. And I don't meet a ton of people like that. And so how do you find both those paths? Like, tell us a little bit about yourself.
It's a big straggly route, to be honest, which has always surprised me every step along the way. So the really short version of the story is, so my background's, it's not in academia or Mars or anything like that. It's in visual effects. So I worked in the visual effects industry for about 6 years full time, and then left about 4 years ago now, I think. Time has ceased to have any meaning, but I think it was about 4 years ago. And the kind of thing with being in visual effects and being on the software side of things, so I was like making kind of tools for artists to kind of facilitate their work being as kind of quick and pain-free as possible. I have no artistic talent whatsoever, so software suited me like really well. I started like making apps and things. And the interesting thing with visual effects is that a lot of the problems solved in visual effects are also kind of very relevant to planetary science data. In VFX, you're dealing a lot with like image processing.
And that, and you're talking about specifically around faking moon landings, things like that. So
this is all how it was done. Like, you know, it's just that we went to the set actually. So like, you know, you're dealing with images that are crazy high resolution and the color has to be spot on because someone will notice if it isn't. And you're talking about like 3D models, which can be incredibly tiny or just like gigantic and like span entire cities and stuff. And so the idea of kind of creating and manipulating and working with images in a useful way or kind of 3D data in a useful way is something that has been faced in VFX for like decades now. And so when I left, I was kind of interested to try and put those approaches towards some kind of planetary data kind of thing. Obviously, always love space. I have beer with space shuttles on it. And so, you know, there's, as I'm sure we'll get into, a huge data set and a huge data source kind of to pull from when doing kind of dev tests and random kind of prototypey projects with space data. So it's a perfect kind of subject to start playing with. And it's just constantly rewarding as well, which is great.
Yeah. Okay. And so like, were you just like always been, you said always been in love with space, but like, is there any story behind that, or just kid who had a model space shuttle when he's growing up?
It's exactly the second thing. Yeah. It's just always been there in the back of my brain. It's lovely to be able to kind of, I don't know, feel closer to it, I suppose. Obviously not part of anything official or anything like that, just being able to play around with it and kind of, you know, show people hopefully a little bit more stuff and a bit more context is kind of awesome.
What made you leave visual effects? Was it just not digging it anymore?
I'm kind of doing it freelance a little bit. Like half of my work is kind of visual effects-y stuff still. It's kind of like lots of like Python stuff and things like that. And then I kind of do a bunch of like iOS-y stuff and web stuff and other things as well. Just get to work with some interesting people doing interesting things and then trying to put kind of those skills in kind of the space kind of mindset and trying to come up with things that could be cool is... yeah, a nice way to spend kind of the free time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really cool. I was thinking about these data the other day because there's like, should we show the thing, Anthony? Maybe we should show.
Yeah, while you were talking, I'm sitting over here playing with Juno Observer.
Playing with it.
Oh, okay.
This is the other one too, because this one is sweet. Yeah. And maybe before we go full Mars, we can talk about this because Juno is an interesting mission from an imagery perspective in that, like, they threw a camera on and then they're like, everything else beyond this inclusion of the camera is up to y'all. Like, as y'all asked for it, here's the image data, go crazy. So what is this thing that you built? Because it is pretty rad to look at imagery this way. I feel like it contextualizes it totally differently.
Thank you, man. I appreciate that. This is something that I started kind of after Aria Browser, after the first version of it, because, yeah, just trying to play around with a different data set, basically. And obviously, I think, you know, this was a couple of years ago now. Like you said, everyone was kind of being just thrown this data and kind of asked to figure it out. And there was a time where there were probably like, I don't know, a handful, like 8 to 10 people all trying to figure it out and kind of swap information and like have like little email threads and things at the same time, trying to figure out how to get this stuff to sit correctly and align correctly on the globe. And so I kind of love 3D stuff. I've always loved 3D stuff. I find it really useful way to visualize things. So I thought it would be kind of cool if you can just display like an entire petajoule's worth of data in 3D, kind of on your mobile if you want to use it, and kind of hopefully see all of the storms and stuff in those images kind of pinpoint right on top of each other. So you can kind of get a bit of a time lapse in a few places. And then that blue line you can see going around it is obviously the path that Juno's taking. And every dot on that blue line is kind of exactly where it was when it took that image. yeah.
It's, I find the mix of like showing the swath of imagery on Jupiter and how big it is just a couple right. of steps out from the closest approach, and then how tiny it gets when you get really close to the planet. It contextualizes yeah. how gigantic Jupiter is, because it's like, okay, it's a giant planet. Like, you know, how big could a planet be? You know, it's a planet.
Right.
And then you yeah. see how the difference in image swath from like here to here. It's like, boink, now it's a tiny part of Jupiter that you're covering with this image.
Yeah.
It's very cool.
It's an amazing data set to work with. I mean, you know, I find Jupiter incredibly fascinating and terrifying and all kinds of like emotional kind of things to look at. And so like working with it was great. I mean, I think there is a certain level of artistry with working with the Jupiter data as well. So, I mean, one of the reasons that I didn't or haven't prioritized it as recently is that actually putting the data together in a kind of technical way and getting a perfect image out is not necessarily what I'm the most interested in. I got kind of close.
This is what I was going to ask about, right. because I thought I heard that the Juno raw data is like really not user friendly. It's like a whole ball of the channels yeah. are split up, and it's like this whole big mess of just bits, and you got to actually do the work yourself to turn it into like a JPEG, yeah. you know?
Yeah, it's amazing. It's basically this long strip of yeah, just like segments of images put together. And you have to kind of split that up into separate kind of parts of the image and separate them a little bit and then put them back together into a frame and then combine that frame in multiple ways to get kind of color and stuff. And it's, yeah, it's an kind of an ordeal putting that together.
Yeah, yeah.
I spent a long yeah. time like rendering a lot of information to try and get those images as good as they are. And, you know, they're fine. They're totally fine. But like now a lot of people are doing it way better with like consistency that I just strove for this entire time and never hit. So kind of like the idea of putting it together and merging it all together has kind of passed me by a little bit. But yeah, it was really good to see it, like you say, in 3D. Gave a bit of context to the size of those storms and stuff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I know I've heard some interviews with like you know, like Kevin Gill has a really great pipeline for right. Juno images, and just the work that he put into to taking that stream and actually producing something with it is like it's yeah. like a full-time hobby for him, basically, is like right. processing Juno data. So
yeah, I mean his images though, like, I mean, there's a reason that his images kind of, you know, get shared everywhere. I mean, like Sean Duran and all those kind of people, like, you know, they're amazing, and they are just yeah, yeah. like as perfect as you would ever hope to get an image like that. Right? So it's phenomenal.
Yeah, it's a cool community too, because there's like some people that are doing kind of like low level stuff, and then others are building on it. So like there's all this like ecosystem of people processing it and moving it around. So it's kind of fascinating.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's the same with the Mars stuff a lot, in the sense of mm-hmm. there are huge communities that build up around it. And in terms of, you know, the term citizen science, I'm not a big fan of that term. But the idea of people who are just not directly associated with missions or employed by space agencies doing stuff, members of the public, doing cool stuff with yeah. this data is such an awesome way to get more final images or more kind of interesting things in front of the general public, right? So it's, yeah, those little communities that build up are just super inspiring and fun to be in.
I'm realizing yeah, as we talk about this that the Venn diagram of the best friendship that we're watching witness the birth of here between Jake and Matt is like we're just adding on more Venn diagrams, with context being another gigantic Venn diagram that Jake cannot yeah. get enough context in his life. And I feel like all of your projects, we'll talk about Aerial Browser now, is all like adding context to imagery in ways that you have not experienced before. So we're going to draw this out at the end of the day. It's going to yeah. be like a six or
emotionally
seven
cathartic
circle.
And stuff. And, like, yeah.
So this is, you got to do the elevator pitch, because there's so much that I'm looking at here that I don't even know where to start okay. explaining what you actually built. And we should mention again, aereobrowser.com. It's like Oreo with an A at the front, browser.com.
Yeah.
So
I kicked myself in with that name, but we'll get to
no,
that.
No, it's great.
Bit,
it targets who you need it to target, but I just want to explain it for people
so?
That are like, what is Aerial?
Thank you very much. So, yeah, I mean, to be honest, the elevator pitch for this has become a little bit unwieldy recently as it's kind of grown and changed. And like when I did this new version with this new splash page, I had to try and come up with kind of three bits of text essentially that describe it. So there's one at the very top, there's one in the kind of rover features section, and then there's one in the like in the terrain section as well. So the one at the top, which I'll just read straight from it, is easily explore all of the latest Martian terrain data and rover imagery right in your browser, on desktop and mobile. is like the most succinct I've managed to get that. Broadly speaking, it's basically a way of, like it says, browsing data from a whole bunch of missions. And it started off just being high-rise data, just being terrain data. But since that point, more kind of mission imagery got in. So HRSC data came in as well on the terrain side. USGS published imagery came in on the terrain side as well. And then I did a release about a year ago, I think, where I put in kind of the paths of Curiosity and Perseverance on certain DTMs. If they overlap, you can now see those, which is great. And obviously with that, you can tell what sol you're on, and that's fantastic. And if you click a part of the path in there, essentially you can then jump to the raw images site for that sol, which is, again, bringing a bit of context to where things were at certain points. But obviously, going to an external site to pull in that information is not necessarily the most useful way to do it. So I kind of thought, well, I want to bring all the stuff together. I want people to be able to see what the rover saw at this point, and not just image data, but other data as well. So the first thing I need to be able to do is read in this image data. And so about 10 months ago, realistically, I started, although it is, you know, as we get to as well, part-time and stuff like that. So it's not necessarily like industrious constantly. But about 8 months ago, I started putting in kind of support for Curiosity and Perseverance and Ingenuity data, with the key thing being trying to make it as easy to browse as possible. Aereo Browser up to that point always worked on mobile, and was I was really proud of that. And I really wanted to kind of, accessibility means a lot of things. It doesn't just mean having access to the data. It means, you know, I can use it with just keyboard shortcuts and things like that, and trying to present it to people in ways that are just easy to grasp and easy to see and easy to understand. And so I tried to do that. And the way I came up with was essentially grouping the many, many, many thousands, hundreds of thousands of images together in what is at this point semi-logical ways. So for instance, what you're looking at on screen at the moment with the Ingenuity data, like the things that come from, the images that come from Ingenuity that could be presented in a sequence are for the most part, hopefully presented in a sequence. Same with other missions. If there's stereo imagery, it's hopefully presented in a kind of stereo viewer. So you can see the left eye, the right eye, maybe an anaglyph view, maybe you can toggle between them, this kind of thing as well. So it's just trying to increase that kind of, I don't know, the ease of viewing, essentially, for people who aren't maybe familiar with the data, certainly not part of the mission, and just kind of, you know, hopefully give them something awesome to play with as well.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's like a really, really useful goal nowadays, because like, so when NASA started like really streaming, like you say, like Opportunity rover data, you know, it's like, okay, you can go to this website and there's some images that come down, and it's like pretty straightforward. Like you could consume that much data and it wasn't a big deal. So if you were like into it, you could go every week and see what came down and look at, you know, 30 pictures and you'd be done, right? But so it's funny because, you know, I was at LPSC a couple weeks ago with all the planetary scientists, and I was talking to these Mass Chem Z folks who have, you know, this beautiful new camera on Perseverance. And I told them, I'm like, you're making it really hard to keep up with this, because I go to the Perseverance page and it's just page after page after page of mosaics every day. Like I can't look at all these photos. There are too many of them. And so it's making it hard for me to, like, I used to, like, you know, try and look at all the images to figure out what's going on with the rover. And now I can't even, like, really process it all with them. So yeah. Having something like this is, like, really beneficial, because you do group that stuff and I can go, okay, there's one picture, even though it's multiple data, right?
Right, right. I think that's the thing. Like, it's the problem on every mission that's going to happen from here on in, right? It's because everything is creating so much data. And, you know, it's obviously phenomenal, and we should stress that it's ridiculously, amazingly fantastic that we have access to any of this stuff. Like the fact that we can see it and get to it on my mobile phone anyway is like brilliant. And that obviously takes a lot of people making the right decisions and kind of fighting for that. But kind of finding your way through it kind of is going to start taking a little bit of a different approach, like a different kind of language almost of how we can kind of consume this stuff, I think. Because like you say, you know, I'm downloading in the background at the moment, I'm downloading some Cassini images, like at the labels for them, because I kind of did a test of doing like Cassini browser or something like that. But it's like 400,000 images. And it's like, okay, how do I even begin knowing to kind of, I went to home for the weekend. I was showing my nan. She's like really interested in space stuff as well. And I was like, I'll show her some cool Cassini stuff. And I had no idea where to start because it doesn't work. I was just like, I don't like this. It's all gray and weird and I don't understand it. So like, yeah, finding the right kind of points, like jumping off points for people and giving them like a nice place to start with the stuff and like, you know, filters and things like that is obviously a good way forwards.
What you were saying about like the increase of data from more advanced images, I feel like on the front page here you've got the amount of images that you have from each spacecraft, and it's like, you know, a couple hundred thousand from Spirit Opportunity and almost a million from Curiosity, and Perseverance is already at 106,000. So like the exponential curve of how much imagery is coming off these things, like, you know, there's going to quickly be as many images from the helicopter as there was from Spirit. Like, that's not too, you know, it's not going to trail that much if it keeps going well.
Yeah, that's 100,000 images a year. So
yeah,
like that's crazy, right? From each rover, like, oh man, it's nuts.
And Cassini, so, you're saying 400,000 over, what was it, how many years is it, 12, 13, I forget.
Yeah, I think so, right?
Yeah, it was a lot, 13 or 14. Yeah,
so even, and that was just like one generation back, so
yeah,
you know, your work, what we're really laying into you here is how much harder your work is gonna get. It's funny though to hear you talk about this in the same way that I hear commercial satellite imagery companies talking about this stuff, that like,
right, I can imagine.
Yeah, it's great. We have all this data from all these planet dovesats, but how do we make sense of it? What do humans go through everything? They're having the same issues at like an industrial scale that you are from the NASA science scale, which is admittedly huge, but there's a handful of Mars missions. You're able to build a thing that contains all the Mars missions. There are hundreds of doves in orbit right now and planets trying to do all this at a ridiculous scale. They're getting probably, I don't even know how often a dove's taking an image, but this is something we should ask Tanya, I guess, how many images they're getting. But it's got to be unbelievable.
There's some like extraordinary percentage of planet imagery that will never be looked at by a human. Like it's like 99% will never ever be looked at by a human being. Like it's it's kind of a silly thing, but
Yeah, completely. I mean, and what do you throw away? What do you back up? Like, how do you do backups of, you know, umpteen terabytes of data on a regular basis? That seems insane, right?
You wait for Matt to go download them all.
Okay,
you've now completed the 3-2-1 strategy of Cassini imagery. It's like, well, we've got one in Colorado and there's one in Bristol now.
I'm trying to make myself vital as quickly as possible, basically. So like it's the key.
How do I elbow my way into the space industry? Be the backup for every planetary mission.
Yeah. Just like I've got to like stack, you can't see it, but just off screen is like stacks of hard drives and things like that.
We joke, but like things have been saved that way. Right. There was like Apollo like video and photos that were lost and somebody's like, "Oh no, I got one of those." And we're like, "Why do you have one?" It's like, "Doesn't matter, I have one." So
it doesn't matter. Don't ask a lot of questions. I'm giving it back to you.
I know this is legally yours, but it was mine for the last 40 years.
I have a question about like the, we can get really geeky about data here, but like when you think about the metadata that comes with some of these, so compare, so I want to ask this in two ways. We'll start with the age one. So look at the older generation of rover, Spirit and Opportunity, versus newer Curiosity, and then even more Perseverance. Is it easier to work with the newer data? Are they being better with like, you know, a metadata that comes with that picture, pointing information, I don't know, time of day, all that kind of stuff?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, I'm glad you asked that because like I've been trying to, I wrote a little blog recently kind of talking about that, like a really tiny one. It's my first one I've written in ages, so it's like tiny. But it was basically talking about that and like how the amount of metadata we get with Perseverance is, and the consistency of the metadata we get with Perseverance and Ingenuity is, you know, a level above what we got with Curiosity. And the fact that, you know, Area Browser at the moment is built on the public APIs that serve the raw data sites, right? So basically when those sites get information back, what they're getting behind the scenes is a whole bunch of data, a whole bunch of metadata that basically has a URL to the image, and then you go off and load the image. And all the stuff that goes alongside that for Perseverance and Ingenuity is things exactly like you said, Jake. You know, it's camera pointing data, it is kind of time of day, it is soul, it is drive, it is site, it is, you know, all of these wonderful things. Like for Perseverance, you know, you get filter data. So which filter is currently active, like all of these wonderful bits of metadata that someone can then go and use. And it's exactly what I'm using for the site in order to try and group them together. That gets a lot harder if you go back to Curiosity. It's still logical and it's still obviously incredibly well thought out. But the work that has clearly gone in to making that way more consistent and accessible for people on Perseverance, it's a huge amount of work that's happened, but it is really paying off clearly for a lot of people. And it's huge. And then obviously when you go back to things like Spirit and Opportunity, they don't have at the moment really a public facing kind of API, like a raw image site, like Perseverance or Ingenuity or Curiosity does.
Yeah.
So all of that data then is then stored over in the PDS. So in the kind of archives.
Oh yeah. I've heard that's fun to work with.
Yeah. It's an interesting one. It's quirky. But you know, it's all there if you know how to look around it. So at the moment, like with the Cassini stuff, the VMC stuff and the Spirit and Opportunity stuff, all of that is coming from the PDS. So basically what I've done is gone and get the metadata information from label files, which are essentially files that live alongside the raw images and kind of tell you everything about it. And it, in most cases, it's like five times as much information as you would get from the raw image feed. So you can always dig down and do that. One of the issues with the PDS is that it's not always up to date. So for instance, the VMC missions, I think, if this is wrong, please someone correct me. But I think the VMC mission images on the PDS only go up to, I think, the end of 2020 currently, which is why my site only has things up to the end of 2020, because I have no idea.
Yeah, they do like releases, I think, right? Like they like dump like a big block of data at a time, I think
that's the thing. So yeah, I mean, comparing them age-wise, is like, you know, the more modern we get, the easier it's certainly getting. And the fact that someone or a group of people have clearly fought for that to happen is pretty amazing.
Yeah.
It's good because they're also a lot prettier. So I would hope that they don't get lost to like some horrible file formats or something. That's good.
Do you see differences in like different instruments? Like, is the Masscam Z team better than the NavCam team?
Ooh,
better than
spicy.
Like, you know, is there like
spicy?
Jigs like better? Yeah,
stirred some drama up.
No, I would never say that.
No pressure, Matt. This is going directly to the mission teams because we've either had several of them on the show in the past or have direct lines to them.
I got Jim Bell on the line right now, so I'm just waiting for you to.
This is terrifying stuff. There is definitely a difference. But from my point of view, having camera pointing information like we get on Masscam is phenomenal because then it solves exactly the problem you were talking about, which is, okay, this panorama that they've taken is 200 images. How do I look at that in the same kind of, you know, in the same frame and understand what that's doing? So being able to have that camera pointing information allows someone like me to kind of exactly like you see on screen now, kind of put those together into a kind of nice panorama. The edges are a little bit funky at the moment. The seams need work, but it's basically how it would look, right? So having that's really useful.
It is better than like I would pull off with the iPhone pano mode if I was there. So,
right,
you know, there's no like weird person's face that got squished in the middle of it.
Yeah, like a really long dog. So that's
now that would be a real humdinger for the whole that weird part of Twitter that like sees an animal and everything.
Yeah. Imagine that sound of like a long dog on Mars, just like panoramic problems or something like that. That's how we find out. It'd be very weird. So yeah, this is super.
We can't confirm life because are dogs shaped like that or
supposed to look like? We don't know.
Low gravity dogs are really long. I guess it's like imagine a dachshund way bigger.
Nice. Yeah, makes sense. So it's super. You know, it's super useful to have that information. Some cameras don't have that. But some cameras don't need that kind of information, certainly, to kind of merge together. You don't get panoramas of everything. Going like comparing missions maybe is more precise because looking at the Curiosity data, currently you don't get that camera model information back with the Curiosity feed, which is why I don't currently, for the Curiosity mission, have any panoramas. I need to figure out how to go and get that data, which is probably something called SPICE, which is a library you can use to kind of calculate a whole bunch of interesting, particular kind of mission-based stuff in Python. So sites like marslife.org at the moment is a really good alternative to that, where you can go and see those panoramas in kind of wonderful, kind of, you know, easy to browse kind of ways, which is just fantastic. And yeah, definitely worth checking out if you're into this stuff.
Okay, and then the other way I wanted to ask that question was, I know I wanted to ask because you have VMC on here, which is the visual monitoring camera. This is that like engineering camera turned science camera on Mars Express. So this camera's like one job was to photograph the Beagle 2 lander when it separated in like 2002 or whatever, and then just to make sure that it separated, and that was its one job. And then they turned it into a science camera. I've heard the metadata on this is like basically non-existent. What can you even do with that one?
Right. So it's an interesting one. So I've always kind of wanted to have something in orbit. In Aria Browser, because that's, you know, the ideally the three stages are, you know, on the ground, kind of in the air, in orbit around it, and then, you know, kind of maybe under the ground with InSight, or kind of looking at data from like other things, or like just really close to the ground maybe. So there's certain kind of levels to Mars to kind of think about this data in, and having VMC in orbit is fantastic to get in. But like you said, there's not a huge amount of metadata other than really exposure I'm using at the moment in order to try and group things. So at the moment, when you go on a page, an item in there, you see they're all grouped by exposure. So at the bottom, it tells you the exposure time for each one of those kind of sequences or single views. So that's kind of like the most base level, immediately obvious thing to do with this. I think what you can do with something like SPICE is you can then get addition, you can calculate the camera pointing data. Which might allow me to do things that are a bit closer to Juno Observer in order to kind of project this stuff down onto a 3D planet, at which point you can kind of create panoramas and things like that that don't exist from these sequences. I mean, the good thing about a lot of these sequences, not necessarily all of them, but a lot of them, is that the movement of Mars in shot is quite significant. So there is actually, if you were to stitch those together, there's probably something quite nice you can get. Yeah, it's a perfect example. Good work. It's like the perfect example. You can make that into a, like a fantastic panorama there. Obviously the quality is quite low on the VMC. It was never designed for this kind of stuff, but I do kind of love it for the fact that it's just pulling back all these crazy images of Mars, right? It's just fantastic.
Yeah, I love it too, because it's just like such a comeuppance story. It's just like it's just like 20 years later, this thing is like, I'm still doing science even though I have no job.
I feel like Tian Wen's is going to be in the same boat, right? Where there's been randomly the coolest Mars imagery all year coming out. Like, oh yeah, we shot this image of, you know, I forget, what was the, was it the separation event that they finally like released imagery of? You know what I'm talking about? Wasn't this a couple, the, like a month ago or something?
The arm, the shot that they had for Lunar New Year, right? So like they had
that's
the,
probably
the
what I'm thinking.
Stick
Oh, that's what I'm thinking like, of, yes.
Check it out. Yeah, you can see like or like the, you know, the North Polar Layer deposit just kind of casually strolling by in the background. You're like, hello.
But they previously only released imagery at separation. That's what I'm thinking of. Like that was the camera they used to show, there goes our lander. And then now it's still doing cool imagery.
Right. Yeah. And they had that one when they went into orbit too. There was like that one where they like, it was like during the insertion burn.
Yeah,
it was like filming, which is also kind of insane. I have lots of questions.
I was gonna say, can we get to some of the terrain stuff, because that would be awesome.
Yeah, okay, I have one more rover question and then we can go to terrain.
So the
stitching and stuff, can you handle all that programmatically? Like, is the data coming in your app is just being like, here's how that goes together, or are you intervening in any way to this stuff?
So essentially what you have to do, it's like if you were to stitch something on your iPhone, right? It kind of has to know kind of what direction it's pointing, and then some kind of things about the camera that you're taking the images with, like the lens attributes and things. At the moment, the way that I calculate panoramas is completely in 3D. So it essentially replicates the camera that's on that mission, on that instrument. And then it kind of projects it out into the world and kind of sticks it on this kind of sphere that's around the side. So the good thing of doing it that way with essentially a physical camera model is that you lose a whole bunch of distortion. On some of the, if people scroll through the site and stuff, if you see kind of some particularly early mass cam mosaics and, or, you know, some of the bigger ones, occasionally at the bottom of the images, you'll see the kind of images themselves, like the tiny bits that make it up, will be really curved at the edges. And that's kind of this undistortion that's kind of automatically happening by kind of replicating this in 3D. I don't have to kind of manually go in and do that. It's kind of just happening as part and parcel of the process. So yeah, it's quite a nice, easy way to do things to get that stitching correctly. And then hopefully down the line, it kind of allows me the opportunity to do things with, like, you know, AR and all that kind of stuff as well, because I'm doing it in basically a sphere at that point. So it can just be around you, because it's kind of that anyway. We're just looking at a flat version of it.
Yeah, absolutely. Huh. Okay, cool. Wow, that's so neat. And I wish I was smarter with this data stuff, because there's so many cool things you can do with it.
It's, you know, there's plenty of space for everybody to do, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, it's
back
just
off.
Like,
he's saying back off, Jake. Stick to the podcast.
No.
Stick to the audio content.
Yeah, please
don't. I mean, admittedly, if Jake was good at this stuff, he would get nothing else done. So
that is definitely the danger. I have freelance work and stuff like that. This is all done spare time, kind of free time, evenings, weekends and stuff. And that is dangerous, kind of like having that lying there, Cassini data downloading the background, thinking I have to get through several days of freelance work before I can then go and look at this stuff. It's, yeah, I understand that struggle, trust me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You're talking to two guys who know all about turning their hobbies into jobs. So.
Yeah, totally. This one's really cool with the actual like tracks of the rover. You know, mm-hmm. the high res stitching of this. Pretty awesome.
Yeah. There's definitely some, there's a bunch of room for improvement, but it's kind of interesting. The interesting thing at the bottom of this, on the bar at the bottom, so in the left-hand corner, it says left and debayered. So what this is, it's a panorama that also has an associated right side view too. So you can kind of view these kind of various versions of the panorama within the same image. So whereas this is, I think it's 28 images, it says on the bottom bar. So it's 28 images grouped together in a way where you only have to look at one. So it's, a little bit
I noticed
easier.
some of the photos of the, where you can see the rover body itself, where there were right and left channels are pretty cool because you get the kind of shifting aspect of, or shifting viewpoint of the rover itself, which is very cool to see exactly where these are coming from.
Right, totally.
There's something about these kind of images that, I don't know, I always, we talked about this a lot, where like the images with a spacecraft in them are just infinitely cooler than the ones of just Mars.
Right, yeah, completely agree. There's something like really emotional about them, I find. Like just like even, you know, the vignetting in the side, the color grade of it all, it's just really kind of filmic.
I mean, yeah, this one looks like an awesome sci-fi movie.
Yeah, totally.
That's awesome.
Yep.
Terrain? I'm just talking about these terrain images.
We should.
I want to talk about how I can zoom into this freaking crate.
Yes, please do.
Amazing.
Please do. Because I'm just like, what about this? What about this?
So you mentioned that did you start out with high-rise data specifically? That's where everything kind of got its start. And is this a descendant of that?
Yeah, it is. So essentially, Area Browser started with me kind of after I did that kind of leaving full-time VFX. I gave myself kind of 20 days to try and get the entirety of the high-rise data set online viewable in 3D. I kind of just managed it. So I had to kind of convert it.
Like at a that nice, point, I was easy making... break after leaving the full-time job.
Yeah, you know, relax, whatever. But it was doable. It was interesting. Definitely learned a lot about things I liked and things I didn't like. It was a good project. And at the time, I was making a bunch of 3D models in order to get them in front of you and display them in the browser. So I was doing a huge amount of pre-processing. And everything you loaded would be a bit small because you were loading a 3D model. Whereas now this new version, essentially it generates all the models in the browser, which is why it can be quite quick. If you kind of just toggle between a bunch of them on the left, it will load them in pretty quickly. And it means that I have to do less pre-processing, which is fantastic. And the results are also better. So it's basically a win-win all the way around. It all started with the high-rise information, or with that data set specifically, and then kind of just expanded from there.
Are you layering in MOLA data with this, like the altimeter elevation stuff?
Not yet. I would love to. So that's kind of the next thing on my list for the terrain data, really, because it's pretty self-sustaining at the moment. So I want to kind of get measurement tools in, which I think would be pretty cool. And then, other bits of imagery that you can kind of drape on the top of it would be awesome as well. And I think that, I mean, it should be relatively straightforward because I have kind of all the coordinate systems of all of these models and stuff. I just need to find a good way to load. Again, it's how do you load images in the browser to get them in 3D? It's the same problem I've just solved, but for terrain data. So I need to find a way to get those images in kind of a quick, easy way. I think the problem with a good amount of that imagery is it can be quite large. So obviously the web is a very specific platform to try and do high power stuff on. I'm pushing it in lots of ways that kind of, you know, don't crash most devices, which is great. but maybe viewing like massive image files is going to be too much. So I might have to cut those down a little bit.
Can you get, like, I was thinking a really good candidate data set for this would be the Cassis data from TGO, right? Because you're going to have a lot of, it's a stereo camera. You got it does the path where it shoots forward and then turns around and shoots backwards and then just puts out these 3D models kind of right off the bat, right?
Right. I think so. Yeah. I mean, all of that kind of stuff, I think, is just, yeah, a perfect candidate for this. There's a couple of different data sources that I'm hoping to get in. It's just,
you're saying like, yeah, man, I know there's all this data. I just haven't got to it yet. Come on, man.
No, I just need more coffee. It's a caffeine level thing. If I can just like get that, then I'm happy.
Well, is but, it, like, I, yeah, that's, no, I'm curious about true. That though. And specifically is because I experienced this even building the much smaller scope downlink, which is just basically scraping Go's data and putting on her desktop.
Have it running as we speak.
It's only using NASA imagery or NOAA imagery that they also shared the imager with JAXA or JMA, I guess it would be. And all that data is open and available. But Europe is actually have to email somebody at UMetSat to just like, I've been trying to figure out where to get the full scale high res imagery. And I think I might have to pay them for it. I don't really understand the licensing terms. Right. It's all very murky. And they're always, even from that, it seems like there's this big difference between the way that the imagery is dealt to the public from NASA and other sources. NASA sets the high bar for like, everything's out there. You can have everything you want because that's the way we set it up. Have you found that, like, is that data even available, Jake? I don't know if that's something that there is
I don't know.
Widely available.
I'm not sure because I don't have a site that I go to look at Cassis like downstream or anything like that. So.
Yeah. I'm wondering if you ran into any of that, Matt, where there was like, or maybe you haven't taken it on yet because of this situation that like stuff is very openly available from NASA and not so much from everyone else in the world yet. And that could be a maturity thing. NASA's been landing stuff on Mars since the 70s. Like, you know, you can't.
Yeah.
Sorry, Beagle, but like you didn't get the reps in. He just didn't get the reps in, you know?
Hey, as a representative here, over here.
It landed. I'm just saying you didn't get the reps in getting the imagery back is my point.
Okay, I'll let you off. Totally. It's a thing. It's I was really happy when I got the HRSC data in. Because it is not a NASA source, which is fantastic. And I think the more of those I can get in, the better, because it kind of proves that point of someone outside the system can maybe do something which is cross agency and cross mission and all that kind of stuff, which is quite nice. But yeah, it is certainly tricky to track that down. Even the HRSC stuff, which is very kind of available and kind of relatively easy to get hold of, it's less easy to figure out if you've got everything. So like I was having a chat on Twitter the other day and they were saying, there's all of these ones that you haven't seen or don't have on the site. And it's like a brand new thing to me. I have no idea.
Didn't know that
it's
existed.
100 ones. Yeah, totally. So the fact that, the PDS is quirky, but everything is there, which is just phenomenal. It's crazy. So having, and this isn't to discount the work that, ESA's doing and stuff with kind of their image browsing, and it is getting like way better and easier to use imagery. From my point of view, I just haven't played with that as much yet because like you say, there's so many other amazing data sets to start kind of putting in and using. So yeah, it's a problem for a future Matt, I think.
Okay. Well, we'll check back on you in a month and see if you've got it finished up for me. And then, yeah. Because I need this. This is actually really important for me to have all this. So,
okay. I'll make notes. We can chat. It's fine.
What Jake is offering is direct line to mission teams to get your EXIF data changed if you need it. What he needs in return is you to finish all the goddamn features.
Trade
someone
offer.
Someone could just source me some coffee. This is like.
We're going to all start buying Matt some coffee. Yeah, everybody join up memberships on YouTube here for Off Nominal. Support us and we will pass the money right through to Matt by way of shipping him whatever kind of coffee
your money into coffee money and then
I like it, thank you.
Are we doing the development bit? Are we doing the whole thing, Jake? Are we attempting the spin-off show where we talk about development for
maybe
a 5-minute
like
teaser?
5 minutes on it.
You have to stop me talking, though. I think that's the problem with this bit.
We got a hard out, okay, it's okay.
Okay.
Yeah, we do have a hard out. Okay. So maybe we'll just start with why Svelte and why not, React or something? Like, why did you choose that? Because it's like an obscure but kind of a, like up-and-comer front-end thing.
So you're going in with the really non-political question to begin with, which is fantastic. So I have done several kind of apps for clients in React. Haven't touched Vue, which is another framework that people use. And I like React, but I started finding that for me personally, it started kind of getting in the way of me figuring out stuff. And I kind of am someone who really likes to get a prototype up and running, and the code will be terrible, but I can kind of prove that it works, and then I kind of refigure out how I'm going to do it afterwards. And I, for me, that was just quite hard in React. And I found Svelte, and I love Svelte. And every project I've done in the last kind of 2 years at this point for clients that needed to have a web component is now Svelte. It, for me, feels like you're just kind of writing HTML and JavaScript. I use Tailwind as well, which is absolutely, again, another completely non-political thing on the internet. But I happen to love that. It's, you know, it services the whole getting stuff done quickly for me. With the way that I build stuff, just get a prototype working, get something looking vaguely pretty, and then kind of figure it out a little bit afterwards. And for me, Svelte and Tailwind just are the perfect combo in that sense.
Cool, yeah. Anthony's fallen in love with it.
Yeah. I have been like, you know, in the last couple of years where, through freelance work, I've done a couple of web projects where, like, you know, former life was all web all day, every day. And then I side jag into the iOS world for a couple of years and still tried to maintain tabs on where the web was at. But I had this, we've talked about this a lot, Jake, that I had this weird relationship with like the state of web development where, so I worked at HappyCog for a couple of years in the late 2010s or early 2010s. Wow, my timeline's totally screwed up, which was like right at the cusp of kind of the Zeldman-inspired decade coming to a close and all the new kids on the block getting up. And that's right when I left to go full-time iOS and hadn't really done a lot of web projects in the intervening years. And everything has changed since. So I've come back to it now with like different eyes. And like, right. I feel like a very old man because of where I started out. And so, you know, I did the same kind of thing that you did, build a couple projects with React and be like, honestly, I like it more than I thought I would. I thought I would hate this entirely, but it's fine. It's passable. Right. And then playing around with Svelte, I'm like, oh, this is, I mean, Jake, you said the other day, like, this sounds like an Anthony thing generally. And there's a compiler. I love compilers. Yeah. So like, I'm all in on that. They attempt to use the word progressive enhancement, which is also relevant to Anthony's interests. So there was just like, it's checking a lot of boxes here. And so I've been pretty thrilled with it so far since I've been playing with
him. I'm waiting for you to go back into our direct message history, because there's like, I think like 2 years ago, I was like, you should check out this Svelte. Yeah. I think you'll like it.
Yeah. I had to give it some time.
10% of all future projects or something like that is the key.
I just had to give it a little time, Jake.
Well, you know, you're going to miss out on a lot of use effect. So I hope you're like prepared to leave use effect behind, because that's.
Yeah.
You don't miss it, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. You know, whatever gets the job done for you as quickly as possible, right? That's the key.
There you go.
Yeah.
I'm a pragmatist at the end of the day. Mm. If it works and it's not janky, it needs to not be janky. Don't screw with my scrolling.
Don't screw with my two rules.
Yeah. It's kind of like that's kind of like 1 and 1B, you know. That's like a subplot. But
nice. Anyway. I would argue probably don't test Aria browser's routing capability at the moment too much if you think that kind of stuff. Just like don't worry about that for the minute. It's fine. Just ignore it.
It does the job. It makes Jake's life better, which by proxy makes my life better. That's all we need. You know, just don't come in this whole, you know, Earth imagery realm, because I'm if Jake's, you know, not going to intrude on your ground on Mars imagery, just don't make your way over to my area. OK, you keep it out there. Keep it out towards the asteroid belt.
Stay out of the desktop wallpaper space.
It's huge. It's about to go gangbusters this year. So 2022 is the year of desktop wallpapers. So, especially on
Mac
Linux.
Mac desktop wallpapers. On Linux too, right. Yeah, you've expanded. Yeah.
Oh, nice.
I have not expanded. I'm going to break several people's heart by saying that. No.
Oh, no.
Sorry.
The iOS people, I'm getting to it eventually. See also the section of the show where Matt talked about getting through freelance work before doing your side projects.
It's an issue.
Okay, so maybe we're getting close to the end here. So is there anything like cool coming up that you're building? Like what's on the horizon for all these products? Anything fun that we can look forward to?
Good Cassini question. Thing.
I'm going to buy all the domains that are like Cassini.observer.
I did Cassini. It. I did it already. I bought okay. Cassini browser. It was like $5 or something. I was just like, I'll get it. It'll be fine. So yeah, the Cassini stuff, I think, is probably the next thing that's going to be pretty awesome if I can get that working in a usable way, like just kind of auto-merging like the RGB channels or like UVIV IR channels or something like that in a useful way, I think would be pretty awesome. I think the interesting thing with all of this stuff, which I don't think I touched on earlier, is like feedback for all of this is like super key. Like as much as it's an awesome site that I hope is interesting to kind of the general public, and that's true of the Mars stuff, the terrain stuff, the rover stuff, the Cassini stuff, like I'm kind of hoping to push it in ways that are kind of useful as well to people actually working with this data on a regular basis, be they, you know, being part of the mission themselves or not. And so feedback from those people in terms of what features are useful, because as you guys undoubtedly know, deciding which features are useful yourself leads to terrible things potentially. So having feedback from people who actually can use it and make use of it is kind of the key bit. So yeah, that's, you know, the Cassini stuff would be super awesome. And if anybody has any ideas, certainly like in the chat or whatever, okay. of what could be a useful way to group that stuff, that would be pretty awesome. And then there's always kind of this to do on my list, which is just like AR stuff. And it's, you know, all of the, if I can get AR working for the terrain data, then suddenly that's pretty compelling, I think. Same thing for the panoramas and stuff like that with that camera pointing data we discussed earlier. So those are going to be the two big things. But I think in the meantime, it's kind of fix the bugs, keep fixing the bugs. Yeah, things like that. But I won't stop putting stuff into it until someone tells me to. So.
Okay.
Awesome. I'm slightly putting my hand up on keep me posted on the AR stuff, because maybe we can hack on some little side projects together. Because I heard there may or may not be some products in the near future that will be highly relevant to AR and my work. So that would be absolutely. Fun to play with.
I've heard the same thing. So yeah, absolutely, dude.
That'd be cool. You two are screwed because you got glasses on already. But
yeah.
You have to make the jump to contacts.
Aren't they pretty big goggles? I don't know. I can't remember. But.
Probably.
They'll wrap around. That'll be fine. We got like the same size. It's fine.
It's clip-ons.
The nice thing for me is I actually don't need glasses for AR because I'm nearsighted. So when the screen's right here, I can see it just fine.
Nice.
That's a solid point.
Yeah. All right. So we're coming up on the end of it here. I don't know. Anthony, what are you working on lately?
Oh, man. Well, there's this whole Artemis lander thing that happened yesterday where NASA's like, we're doing the second lander.
This week finally felt like there was some news for you to make podcasts about, which I know you
Yeah, although I'm not going to podcast until like Monday because there's probably going to be a presidential budget on Monday. So
yeah, you gotta wait
here's
for
my
that.
Plan
yeah.
is I'm going to trust them that they said it's coming out on Monday, and I'm going to do the show on Monday when they release it. And if it doesn't come out on Monday, I'm going to do it Tuesday morning. And if it comes out right as I'm recording, I'll just do it again. So that's my plan. I don't know. I think it's like a cool thing that NASA's doing because they're just saying, you know, it's like the Gillette Onion article. Fuck it. We're doing 5 blades. Do you remember that one? Yeah. I feel like it's NASA's version is like, we're doing 2 landers. Yeah, here it is. Fuck everything. We're doing 5 blades. This is NASA's version of that. Yeah, so we'll see. It's going to be a battle to get the money. So I'm going to be thinking about that. There's some interesting implications of the way that this developed where, like, you know, the people that lost out on the first round of Artemis landers, are they going to come back with the same thing and try to lower the price? Are they going to do totally different things? Is Blue Origin going to break up with everybody else and try to go their own way? Is Jeff Bezos actually going to put the money in that he promised in the open letter that was kind of embarrassing a couple months ago?
And remember this, SpaceX isn't competing for this one, so why lower the price?
Well, the problem is, Jake, that there's going to be a presidential budget in which says a dollar amount, and all of those people are going to know, guess we got to fit in that dollar amount. So that's an interesting aspect, because there wasn't last time. Right. The That's bids true. Were out yeah. and they said, we'll scratch a number in here on this request and y'all write into us. Let us know what you want to do. This time it's like, we're calling the shot. You're putting a $3 billion budget and you got to figure that out. So I don't know.
And it's nicely contained in this like specific line item so that Congress basically has to fund it, which is
yeah, yeah, right. Like fund both or cancel one, or what are you going to do here?
The little bucket that says Congress's special request.
Yeah,
you can either fund it or you cannot fund it.
Yeah, you put the money in here, then you fight on which one of your constituents is going to win.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's what I'm working on, is doing that. What about you?
Good. So I put out my LPSC episode this week, which was really fun. It's one of those, usually I do just kind of pretty straightforward interviews, but this is one where I took multiple interviews and kind of wove them together into a story. So a little bit of music in there, a little bit of drama, a little bit of emotion. The Venus community is spicy right now. They are excited. They're electric. They got lots going on. And it was a really fun story to tell. So you can go and listen in on what is basically the first episode of We Venusians. It was lots of fun.
That's what, so, Matt, this is your marker, because you've got a couple years to sort the rest of your projects out before Venus data starts coming back.
Yeah. Hey, if anyone on the mission wants to chat, like, just get in touch. Like, you can get this going.
He'd love to start the code early, is what he's saying. And give you feedback on the EXIF data. Get the EXIF data right.
Yeah.
And you gotta figure out how to work with radar, because that's how it all... That's the Venus version of a camera is radar. So, it's funny because like one of the things that we talked about on that episode with some of the scientists was these Venus people they're working with like this ancient Magellan data these days. It's got like basically like no metadata that's that's useful, right? So like they're it's tough for them. It's tough. They're 75 meter resolution or some awful thing. So
Wow.
We got some off nominal plugs to do, Jake.
We do.
Number one. Number one, we have YouTube memberships, and we would like you to join up so you can get in the Discord, because the Discord is a lovely place to hang out with people.
There's all sorts of fun events. How much SLS costs today in the Discord.
So. Many times. Yeah.
Whatever answer you want.
Yeah, it's
whatever
a choose your own adventure, you want, baby. So join up on YouTube.com/offnominal. Get yourself in the Discord, support the show, add to the beer fund so we can keep this going.
And
the coffee fund for Matt, and so that you can fund the epic event that's going to happen when SLS gets its shit together and we actually go down to Florida, which is getting closer, so you might want to start chipping in. And next week, Jake. Oh, baby, next week. We're finally doing it. Tori Bruno on the show next week. It's going to be awesome. So, head of ULA, Tori Bruno, coming on for Off Nominal Shenanigans. I think we're vaguely kind of thinking about this as an Origins episode, a la what we did with JB a couple years ago.
Yeah, we had Jim on to talk about sort of how he got into the job that he had as NASA administrator. And so, Tori is a perfect person to also have that kind of conversation with, because he's got tons of interesting history that I would love to...
Yeah.
Open up that box and
we know executive Tory, but we want to hear about engineer Tory, and we want to get some stories out of those early days. So that'll be fun. So that's next.
I want him to finally like tell the full story of the dynamite in the barn. Keep hearing, sort of hinted at.
What if it doesn't exist and it's just the thing that he keeps saying? He like just only ever wants to hint at it, but there's actually no payoff.
We keep pressing him on. He's like, "Look, guys, I made it up for a story for a podcast one time."
You do a better Tori Bruno than my Leo Enright that I did before the show.
I should practice it, right? And then I'll be ready for him. So that's coming up next week. Pretty exciting.
Yes. What else we got, Matt? Do you have anything else you would like to plug? You mentioned you do freelance work a bunch of times. People want to work with Matt. Where do they go?
They can go to mattbreely.com. It has a little waving hand on it that will wave every 3 seconds at you.
That's
pretty good. If you just, anyone's got interesting kind of bits of data they want to have visualized, particularly space stuff, obviously is kind of what I'm most passionate about, but anything else is always good as well. Thank you so much.
Noted. Noted in my head, because it seems like a thing that should happen.
Absolutely, man.
All right. Thanks again, Matt, for coming on.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been super fun.
Yeah,
it was
great.
A classic Thursday here. Everything went swimmingly, Jake.
Went great, yeah.
Yeah, you got to go fill that up again. So, all right, everybody. See you later.
Bye.
Yes.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. End of test.